JMLWRadio.com network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Striga, as always joined by my man, Dylan. Dylan, how are you doing?
Striga, today is a really special occasion on this show. We're talking about pro res coming back.
Exactly.
On the first... Not the end result, not the end step, but we're taking the steps forward.
Oh yeah,
one small step for man, one giant leap for pro res right now. And Striga, if that is your real name, but that's what I call you. If that is your real name, I have to bring it up to you that so much of our time has been spent in the past few months watching these empty arena shows. And now the fans are going to get to see some new stuff going on, and I'm so excited to talk about it. And hopefully all the listeners enjoy it, but most importantly, I really, really, from the bottom of my heart, want to give a special shout-out to everyone who messaged us, specifically me, because I got many DMs about this, about the last episode we did about Hana Kimura's memorial episode. I know so many people were affected by that, and many people had very nice comments about Hana, as well as our episode. And I'm so thankful that we got the chance to do that, and I'm so thankful that the people out there responded so positively for it, because at least I always get a little nervous when we... Those shows have a little bit more importance, in my opinion, than even goofy stuff, or serious stuff that we're about to talk about, even in pro res. But those shows have a little bit more importance to me, so I really felt a lot of love from the people out there, and I was so proud of all of our listeners specifically that reached out, so I was very happy with how things turned out, and I want to thank everybody personally.
Yeah, absolutely. I can only say the same thing about this episode that we did. It, of course, was not easy to do that, and still... To this day, it feels so unreal to me that she's gone. I don't think that I've fully... I can't really fathom that she's gone right now, you know? It still feels so unreal, but it is real. And that is a great tragedy, of course. And
it's so terrible because it feels like... about this time last year, we had an Aoki show that we did. And again, we had a lot... comments on that, but I felt the same way in that situation where it was like, I can't even believe he's gone, but this one is even worse because she's half his age, you know, pretty much, and stuff. It felt like she had so much of a career in front of her, and it's kind of crazy.
And you know, usually pro wrestling should be an escapism from reality. Sometimes it is not, like in these cases. And we're recording this episode, of course, in very uneasy times, not only due to the Corona situation, but also due to the protests that came from the George Floyd case. And I'm really glad that people are voicing their anger throughout different methods, because there's a topic that needs to be addressed and that has to be brought up in public all the time. So this definitely is a show where we can both agree that Black Lives Matter.
Oh, absolutely. I really just hope everybody out there is safe and we get all kinds of justice for the people that deserve it in America and worldwide, I would say. A lot of places all over the world, not even just America, have taken to protest, and it feels like there's this big swell of support going on, and hopefully everybody out there, and that's really my main wish, is that everyone out there can be safe and this all can end in a good way for everyone after a very terrible and tragic thing that happened.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, pro wrestling, as I said, needs to be an escapism from reality, and we are slowly but steadily returning to a somewhat normal state, at least in Japan. When you look to America, the big promotions AEW and WWE have been running all the time in various facets. The indie wrestling scene has not yet returned. In Germany, we got WXW. They did a similar thing as in Japan. They prepared one of their smaller arenas that they sometimes use to return with their weekly WXW Shotgun series, which I'm a huge fan of, and I'm so glad that that is back. In Japan, over the last couple of months, we had wrestling returning, first of all with some few shows, and then more and more companies started running more and more shows over the last couple of weeks. And I want to throw it to you here, Dylan, to name your promotion of the lockdown. Who do you think has adjusted the best to this situation, and who do you think gained the most from this?
I think that last part remains to be seen when it comes to the fans and things like that. My gut feeling in terms of overall, not really just in-ring work, because I think that could go a lot of different ways. So for me, I have really enjoyed a lot of the empty arena wrestling, actually. I think I'm one of the only people that maybe feels that way. I haven't really had a problem with it, other than it's different more than anything, but it hasn't made me like hate wrestling or anything like so many other people. I pretty much enjoyed, if it was good, I liked it. If it sucked, I said it sucked pretty much. But I think there's a lot of different ways of handling it. If you go by company from company, to me, I feel like if you subscribe to our Patreon on the $5 tier, patreon.com/EasternLariat, I reviewed the entire Dragon Gate Kingdom Gate tournament, and I felt how they handled it. You look at the way their production values were, and it was so much worse than normal. Yeah. And I felt like the tournament overall suffered for it. Whereas someone like a company like, say, DDT, we're going to talk about them a little bit, and also in the Joshi Res world, Ice Ribbon, really were adjusting well to it. And like Ice Ribbon, it's like they totally changed, not changed everything, but they threw out any semblance of having a serious wrestling company during this entire time, and had matches with Baby Yoda, time traveling, someone wrestled a broomstick on their shows, you know. So that was one way to approach it. And then you have something like All Japan, where you had the wrestlers on the outside, and I feel like they did a very good job of having, not losing their identity or changing anything really about how they wrestled. There wasn't any title defense or no champion carnival, which I think was kind of disappointing, but it's going to happen later on. Mm-hmm. But I thought they really adjusted well to how they did it. So to me, my gut is telling me that All Japan was the one that handled it best.
First of all, I agree with you. With Dragon Gate, I did not really feel anything when I watched the matches. Some of them were good, and I liked that Kaito Ishida had somewhat of a bigger role. I'm a big fan of Ada winning the tournament over Naoki Doi in the end. But as you said, the production values and everything surrounding it was not something that felt like it really mattered. It felt like something they threw out there to have something to do, to keep fans to subscribe to the service, and to, well, just do the tournament they planned for this time of the year. So nothing was really bad, but few things were good either, so it didn't really come across well.
Yeah, there was nothing great. Usually when you have these tournaments, there's like, you want to have, I mean, ideally you'd have all great matches, but you know, in a tournament like a G1 or Champion Carnival, or, you know, Noah's Global League and one whatever. And this King of Gate last year, I thought it was a really strong tournament that had, it really got me into that promotion again. Here, I thought they had a lot of good matches. I thought A and B Block really delivered pretty strongly. C Block really didn't, even big matches like Eita and Ben K, which was a rematch of last year's final.
That was crazy, right?
Yeah, it was a really disappointing match, huh? You agree?
Yeah.
We haven't really talked about this tournament that much and together, anyway. On the Patreon, I have, but you didn't like that either.
No, I don't know what went wrong there. I usually am a fan in these situations, like in the tournament case when you got somewhat short matches that you can go through easily. But when you got a show, or when you do it like Dragon Gate, they always put up two matches at a time, and there is really not a lot substantial to it. Most of the matches, they were doing stuff, and then they went right to the finish, and nothing really to grasp on, except for, as I said, there was the story built around Naoki Doi, who returned after losing controversially. Then there was Eita winning, so they at least set up those two guys to be rivals for Naoki Doi in the upcoming months.
Yeah, I really wasn't feeling how that played out. I just thought if you're going to give Ishida this win, it's like you go right and take it away, like, you know, to 3 days later or whatever.
It felt like they wanted to serve two masters at the same time, and that didn't work out.
Yeah, and I also didn't like him making the finals, because now they're going to just have another match again. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's very possible Doi just beats Eita. Yeah. And like, what was the point of all this? It's like, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of that. I thought the last couple of days, the tournament, the first few days, I thought were pretty enjoyable, actually.
Yes, same.
I felt like I was higher on it than a lot of people, mm-hmm, who were like, this all sucks.
Oh, I liked the first round matches a lot better than the later rounds, too.
Yeah, I thought the A and B blocks both did good. Mm. I don't think there's really anything of worthwhile in the C block guys. They had some guys I like, but they just didn't deliver or whatever. I really liked the Jason Lee and Ishida match. I think that was probably my favorite match of the tournament.
It was great, yes.
Yeah, my man Kai had some good matches. That's another thing I didn't like about Doi. Like, they started the storyline in the Kai match, which I thought was really well done, where he worked on the leg, did good work, and then each match, it was like, with every subsequent match, he would blow off all the legwork sooner and sooner. It felt like in these matches that they tried to tell. And then the final match didn't even do anything with the leg. It was all about the arm. Mm-hmm. So it was like, what's the point of working over the leg and all of this bullcrap when you go into the final match and Eita's working over the arm, which made sense for his finisher, but why didn't they just do the arm work before in the other matches to lead up to it?
Yeah. I don't have an answer to that.
Am I crazy?
No. You're absolutely not crazy. Yeah. So it's not like a lot of things came together for Dragon Gate. They certainly are not the winner of the lockdown. Ice Ribbon, I watched two of their shows from May 30 and May 31. I thought they delivered well. I liked the shows, and I didn't miss anything that I would have gotten with an audience. So I was just entertained watching their shows.
I also really liked how they involved the fans with the voting in the tournament, because they brought back the IW19 title, which is something I loved personally, because that's really what started me on Pro Res, was their 19 o'clock pro wrestling shows, Ustream in the old days. So they're bringing back this title, and I was like, all right. Pretty much. And they did it where they had the two blocks were, the one block had all the people from before who had had history with the title, and then another block had new people that had never wrestled for the title. So they, at any time, they had a 19-minute time limit for the matches, and if it went to it, they would have a fan vote to decide who moved on, like when Suka ended up getting eliminated by Hoshi due to the fan vote. So I thought that was very interesting. I thought they used the limitations that they had, and Ice Ribbon has always been a company that's willing to go outside of the box, obviously, anyway, if you follow them, but I thought they really handled themselves well in this quarantine setting.
They also made sure to add some English commentary to their shows, with a friend of the show, Yappy, of course, being there on commentary, translating some of the stuff for the international fans, so that went over well.
Yeah, that's true. Yappy's done a great job. They started doing the English Twitter account, too. So they're an English shop as well. You can order some stuff on there. I think they've really made some great strides, even during the pandemic. I thought they've done a great job for what it was. So they'd be way up there for me. And I'm glad you watched. I'm glad you enjoyed the show.
Did your fellow Gato move?
Yes. Yes, Choco Pro as well.
Yeah. I think Choco Pro gained a lot of new fans, too, from just being there on a regular basis when not a lot of pro wrestling was running, and providing some entertainment, some very light entertainment to the audience that really grew in the last couple of weeks. So that was something that you could always check out too. All their shows are free on YouTube, so check them out. It was really always a nice time to follow that.
Absolutely, that's a great point. And you could see it in the men's world too with a promotion like 2AW, which before had basically been way under the radar. But because there was a dearth of promotions right now during the time, Wrestle One had just closed down as well before this, so there was some spots open. If you wanted to watch some Japanese wrestling and you had some time, now 2AW probably got some eyes on it that they never had before, and it was really great timing with Okabayashi as champion. They had some great matches with Chango and Kaji Tamato. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of stuff, getting some good buzz on there. I really loved the Okabayashi and Tank Nagai match that they had. That was like that was my favorite match last month in all the promotions. So, and also, good point on 2AW, they probably made some good money renting out their arena to the company. So now they might be the real answer, like, in terms of who gained the most. I think they might have made a step up during this that, you know, even with fans, they wouldn't have been able to make.
Like, you can go to Cage Match and track when you go to a random show from 2AW. You can click on the arena and click on 2AW Square. That has been used so often and for so many TV tapings now, like never before. So yeah, they really made a good amount of money, or they should have made a good amount of money. 2AW overall is my runner-up of the promotion of the lockdown, just because of what you said, that they gained so much profile from fans that probably would not have checked them out if regular wrestling would be running all the time and there would be independent shows all over the world running all the time. So they gained some new fans, I think, and mostly through the matches that you mentioned. Tank Nagai versus Yuji Kobayashi was a great match. I loved that too. And also, you mentioned the tag team, Chango and Kaji Tomato. They were tag team champions basically throughout this lockdown run. They won the championship on March 25 at the last Currican Hall show that they still had an audience for, and they now lost it to Ayumu Honda and Taishi Takisawa at the tail end of the lockdown. So can really call them lockdown champions. And they made the most of it. Chango came from nowhere. He was on very tiny shows. He was on Heat Up sometime, on Secret Base shows. Kaji Tomato also gained a lot of new fans, even though he's been around for years and years and years. And I remember back then in 2016 when they did this Super J Cup, I was lobbying for him to be there for K-Dojo, and he in the end made it to the Super J Cup. So I was really glad about that. You really got to check out those matches that they had. On April 24, it was Shango and Kaji Tomato against Katara Yoshino and Tatsuya Hanami. Then May 10, they defended against Kengo Mashimo and Kuno Toshima in another great match. And a very fun match, too, was the one against Dinosaur Takuma and Kyo Mogami from May 23rd. So all of that is really worth checking out. And amidst that, of course, I gotta once again shout out my man Tatsuya Hanami, who is just getting new fans too. And he had a great, great match with Kengo Mashimo on the last 2AW show from this past week. I don't know if you saw that already.
Yes, I did. I'm a huge fan of Kengo Mashimo. I'm like a longtime fan, so I always make sure to check out his matches. And that was a really good match. Hanami, like, you were on the ground floor of this guy. And I think if he continues, all he needs is a chance. And like in places that get eyeballs, and I think he'll impress. You know, he's really got a lot of upside, great talent, and I love the chemistry between him and Mashimo, who I think is a really always an underrated performer, but hopefully he can get back. Now that the fans are coming back, I hope some of these guys that we're talking about, especially Hanami, who's a really young guy, like, you know, Chango and Tomato, they've been around for 15, 18 years and stuff. But Hanami's a really a raw young talent that shows that he has a lot to him, and I'd love to see him take a step up, and he might be able to make something and make a step up in his whole career, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tatsuya Hanami, he has been getting out there. He was on the first of the All Japan Wednesday specials, where he wrestled Hokuto Omori. So if those two promotions continue to work together, like it seems like they will, this is going to be a rivalry that both guys could benefit from, because they could be generational rivals.
You mean Hanami and Mashimo?
No, Hanami and Hokuto Omori on All Japan.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, huh?
there is no generational rivalry between... there's a generation between the two. That is...
Yes, exactly. Maybe an intergenerational rivalry, yes. But no. The North Wolf,
yeah.
Like, it's somebody that I've really appreciated during this lockdown, I think has really made a step up. But yes, that would be a great rivalry. I think both of those guys have a ton of potential.
Absolutely. So... You mentioned All Japan Pro Wrestling. I've got them on number 3 of the promotion of the lockdown. I think they handled themselves well. They also ran 2AW Square for the most time. Only the first show that they did in April was in Shinkiba. And they used the time well to introduce the Enfance Terrible. I'm terrible in pronouncing French, so I'm very sorry. Shotaro Ashino, Kuma Arashi, and Yusuke Kodama to their roster and to right away place them in crucial storylines, with Shotaro Ashino going right away after the Triple Crown and after Zuwama and being positioned very strong. This goes out to Pro Wrestling Noah. That is how you position a guy that comes in new. With Kuma Arashi, he basically has been used as the sidekick of Shotaro Ashino, but that is absolutely fine because you can't always focus on all the guys coming in. And Yusuke Kodama, he is somewhat more in a comedy role now, which is weird because they introduced him as a strong new junior to the roster. And he beat some guys in his debut. Then he had this standoff with Koji Iwamoto we talked about on our last regular show we did, where they just were left standing in the ring by Susumu. And from there on, he just said, okay, I'm now in a tag team with Black Mansory.
Well, I thought, honestly, Kodama really over-delivered. Like, when he came in, I thought he was very motivated, looked great, and yeah, like this Black Mensa Ray deal. Well, he had a match with Mensa Ray, and then they had this little tag match. Is that going to be a permanent thing?
It's supposed to be a permanent thing now. They did these skits on the last All Japan show together, Backstage 2, and they are doing some more stuff in the ring together as well, so I think it's going to be a fairly regular thing.
Okay. Well, I liked his match versus Okada and Akira Francesco last month. Like I said, I thought he really acquiesced himself well. But that's a little interesting. Black Mansa Ray I do like, actually, though. I will say, as a worker, I think he's kind of underrated in his own way. I've always kind of been a fan of him, even without the mask. But... yeah, Kodama felt like he could have been a real fresh face to push on the top of the scene, but I don't know, the entire booking of the junior division and of the company, there's a lot of question marks.
Yeah, now they announced that Yosuke Santa Maria wants to challenge for the junior heavyweight title too, because remember, in the King of Gate, beats Suzumu, and demands it to be a 3-way match with Suzumu Yokosuka and Hokuto Omori. So that is something new, too.
And Santa Maria really delivered, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
In Kingsgate, you know. When you think of Yosuke Santa Maria, I'm not really a fan, but here we saw, I thought, the best that Yosuke Santa Maria has to offer.
You know, the All Japan Junior Division can use some new faces, and if they get Santa Maria in, that is something that All Japan can also benefit from. The other thing that I wanted to mention about Black Mensore is we are right now on our Patreon doing a series on Hiroyoshi Tenzan on his career. In the second episode, we talked about a match that Junji Hirata was in, and we had a debate about, well, not exactly a debate because we both agreed that he was much better as Super Strong Machine, and I feel the same for Yoe Nakajima, aka Black Mensore. He was okay when he dropped his Mensore mask at the first time. Then he got his mask back or in a different mask, and he's now Black Mensore. I think he has so much more charisma with the mask than he has without it.
Yeah, he's an Okinawa Pro original Super Dolphins company. He was Minso Rey or YG for a while, and then Black Minso Rey now. So I thought you were going to say we were about to do a career retrospective on him on the Patreon.
Well, we could. And I was like,
we absolutely could. Let's go back to Okinawa Pro, baby. But no, I actually agree with you. I like Yohei as himself, but definitely agree he stands out much more with this mask and gimmick in general. I remember his attire when he was just Yohei. I thought it was really terrible as well, so I think that may have had to do with it. But I agree with you, just in terms of standing out. At the end of the day, as himself, he was just kind of positioned as a guy, pretty much, which I think that kind of leads to how they did with Izanagi as well, where you had this guy who was a good worker, but they never really pushed him to stand out or do anything with him. But with the mask, at least he has something that he can hang his hat on and be a very a contributor to the undercard scene. And I think that's where Black Minso Rey is, whether he's teaming with Kodama or Takao Mori as well, that we've seen this year.
We should really go back to November 8, 2009, when Kaijin Habu Otoko defended the Okinawa wrestling title against Black Minso Rey. That was actually a TV show, so I need to seek that out. I hope that's out there.
It sounds like... I was about to say, if you can find it, let me know.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you. That is something that All Japan needs to work on, and it seems like they are doing something with it now. So my third place for Promotion of the Lockdown goes to All Japan Pro Wrestling. They are doing good stuff, and I'm really hyped for the eventual Suwama versus Shotaro Ashino match, and I like that they are keeping that away from the empty arenas, and it seems like they will be pulling the trigger on that match once the crowd returns.
Yeah, a lot of the feud has really been more Ashino and Kento. You know, they had that segment where he cut the promo in the ring and Kento came out on the ramp.
It also was Ashino against Jake Lee, and then Jake Lee lost to Shuji Ishikawa, so that baffled me too.
And what about Yoshitatsu's title defense? They also built up as well at the start of the month. They quickly abandoned that.
They quickly abandoned that. Yoshitatsu actually had a not so bad match against Sego Tachibana. Shout out to WH for this occasion. I thought the match was not bad at all.
No, this kind of role is good for both of these guys. Just a very mid card type of match. It was on a Wednesday show. This was the only match on that show. This is one of their Wednesday shows, which I definitely think has been one of the best things to come out of these this lockdown. I hope that they continue that somehow. Just have one match show. You know, every Wednesday, I think that's a really good hook to have on the network. But, yeah, it wasn't a bad match. I watched it too, and it was okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, going to my number one promotion of the lockdown.
Wait, before we go to number one, because I don't want to go into it because I don't think this is number one. But I want to talk to you about it.
Okay, you want to talk about Noah, or what do you want to talk about?
Yes, how do you think Noah's handled this lockdown? Because here's the thing. I think that if you look at their wrestling, there's been a lot of good matches, actually. In the tag league, you had Nakajima Sugera and Minoru Tanaka. Some really good junior action with everybody, pretty much. Ogawa, Kotage, Harada. There was a great Ohara and Kenya Okada match, which I really enjoyed last month. Like, pretty much everybody's a contributor. But the overall package, you kind of teased it earlier when we were talking about All Japan, is like, they brought in all these new guys from Wrestle 1 and not really taken advantage of really any of them, I would say. And it's kind of difficult. The title, it's difficult because, like I said, in All Japan, I really think Suwama is a super cold champion, but you also have Ashino there that kind of, and that's really the thing. Like with All Japan, a lot of their booking is really, I don't love it, to be honest with you, but you have this great main event thing with the Enfants Terribles. So that kind of covers up any negatives you want to point to. And Noah, they don't have that guy. Like, any time they've tried to bring in a new guy, it hasn't worked. You know, so, and it hasn't worked because they haven't booked them right. So it's just kind of crazy how that happens. But what do you think of Noah during all this?
The perfect example for it. When is Daiki Inaba actually having his first match?
You're asking me? Ask Nosawa.
I mean, they did this thing with Kato Kiyomiya, where he called out Okada and did the Rainmaker pose, and on the show thereafter, He did it again, and out came Daiki Inaba. That was baffling to begin with, but he has not been on any shows since then, either.
Well, the true rainmaker. He could not stand by this.
And the thing about Pro Wrestling Noah really is, since Nosawa has been booking the thing, how often can you do the X debut thing? I mean, they've been doing that for, it feels like, every second show now.
Yeah, I think since the very first show of the year, actually, yeah. they've been doing that. They just did it yesterday, as we record, with Kaz Hayashi coming in as well.
Yeah, they did it with Kaz Hayashi and Kenno Kashin. They came in at the same time.
Oh, of course. And people have been going in and out, too, like Hideki mm-hmm. and Saba. They said they're gone now. Which is a real shame, like, because Hideki especially had a great match with both Go and Nakajima during his run, and I felt like they had some more stories to tell with him, but oh well, I guess we have to have Kendo Kashin on the show here, but not that there's anything wrong with that. You know, he's a great contributor in wrestling history, but then you have guys like Yoshioka as well, who you bring him in, and he's jobbed out to everybody, it seems like, right now.
Yeah, he did get one pinfall over Kasayashi in a six-man tag they did, but then he lost straight away in the singles match in 9 minutes. So I really don't know where they are going with Seki, because I'm a big fan of his.
But he's
not the only one. Look at Hao and Neo.
They
had this
they change their names and gimmicks.
They change their names and gimmicks and looks. To what effect? They still are who they are, and they are losing most of the time.
Soya, another Congo guy.
While it feels like All Japan is really stabilizing their roster with bringing in a select few guys they get behind, it feels like Noah is doing the opposite. We felt that they were stabilizing their roster too when they reshuffled all the junior stuff and basically started that anew with all the guys turning on one another. We talked about that on our last regular show too,
where I got confused
like hell.
So did the Samurai TV guys as well. So many people have been confused by that whole segment.
There was a page in Tokyo Sports the week after where they placed all the alliances with arrows. So that was funny.
I love it.
So in Noah, it feels like they are once again reshuffling everything. And I don't know why. They should right now concentrate on the guys they bring in. And if you bring in a Seki Yoshioka, why do you bring in a Kasayashi right after that? Because there have to be some guys who drop a fall, and other guys have to win. And if you bring in guys that come from a different company that maybe has gone down, you need to be pushing them, because otherwise the Noah fans will look at them as, okay, he's coming from this promotion, he loses all the time, so he must suck. And that's not really helping anyone. Then there is another thing that kind of bothers me. They brought in Kenno Kashin now, and that is not the point that I want to make. It doesn't really bother me that Kenno Kashin is here.
No. Yes.
He's like one of my cult favorites. I kind of like him, even though I don't really appreciate his wrestling nowadays so much. But he's funny. I like him.
Yes, exactly. I'm not saying he's the greatest worker, but he has value on these undercards. Like, just like he was in All Japan, he was a valuable member of the undercard.
Now, him, Nosawa Rongai, and Kasayashi, they deemed themselves the Sugiura-gun juniors. Then you have the Congo juniors. And the only unit that seems to not have a heavyweight in their ranks is Stinger. And I don't get why they need to portray like Neo and Hao like the junior version of someone. Or why Nosawa, Kasayashi, and Kenno Kashin have to be the junior version of something. Why can't they be their own group?
That's a good question. Full Throttle 2 doesn't have a heavyweight right now. Cody Gate was.
Oh, one. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but, he's close enough. Mm-hmm. But, Caution, I don't know what they're doing with all of that. But the whole group, I really understand where you're coming from. This is something that has been done in their defense on this. This is not the first time. Even in back when the prime era of New Japan happened, you had like the Team 2000 Juniors, like that Kanemoto led and stuff like that. So we've seen this kind of thing before, like a junior version of so-and-so. But in my heart though, if I were booking it, I agree with you. I'd rather them just be their own thing and not be like the junior version of whatever.
I mean, they do it in New Japan, of course, too, when you have Chaos and you have LIJ, but they don't right away throw it out that they are Kongo Jr. or Chaos Jr. or LIJ Jr. They just are LIJ.
Right. And you're right. That's how it should be. That would be the best way to do it. But like I said, I don't know. There's a lot of problems in Noah right now when it comes to booking. I also think another criticism I think I would like to bring up is that during all of this time, the world champion has been MIA, it feels, in terms of doing anything important, which is not a good look. I know he had some injury issues, too. But I think having him along, like, that's really my main problem with both of these companies. Like, all this stuff with the juniors and all of that, I think that can end up being rectified in the future. But what I have a really hard problem getting over in All Japan and Noah, again, like, both of them, like, any criticisms, I think everything we've mentioned can be rectified if they book smarter sure. from here on. But at the end of the day, Go and Suwama as champions, like I just don't feel it at all. Like they come across like neither of those guys come across like main players in their promotion, and I think it's kind of a bad look right now that they have.
I mean, if there was a good timing for the champion to be MIA, it probably was this time with no crowds being there. So I get what you're saying, but at the same time, it was good for Go that he had the time and the chance to heal all his injuries to return when it really matters now.
You're right. I think that's a fair point to say. But right now, you have Nakajima. They've set themselves up in a weird place, I feel like, as the crowds return. Whereas, I think All Japan, you have that clear thread with Ashino that you can look forward to. With Noah, it feels like there is no clear thread. The closest they did was with Kaito, which I enjoyed his matches. Like, he had the singles match series throughout May, and I thought they were all good.
Yes.
I really liked the match with Kotike, even though it was clipped a little bit, but still, I thought it was a really good match. He had some other matches in there that were worth watching. Then he does this Okada deal, which, do you think there's anything to this, or was it a publicity stunt, pretty much?
I think it was both.
Yeah, it could be both.
Yeah, we booked this altogether card in one of prior episodes, and I strongly believe that some of that will come to fruition once all the promotions can agree how they want to run this altogether like show.
That's true, like I said. So that's actually kind of cool. I agree with you. I think that is going to happen eventually, especially when the fans go about. Because remember, no Olympics this year. I think there's a really good spot if they wanted to do something like that in the middle of if things go well. And like you said, it just takes the politics coming together more than anything else. But they at least showed they were at the meeting with Hiroshi Hase, all the leaders of the company, Maru Fuji, Tanahashi, and all those guys. So at least they showed that they're willing to step out publicly together, and the heat's not that nuclear. So if they could get something together, and I think it would be a great opportunity for someone like Kaito to get his name in the news like that by bringing up someone like Okada, and I think that would be a very interesting match. But like you said, if you follow our show that we how we booked it, basically all the matches were tag matches, which is how I think that would play out. It would have to be Kaito and two random guys, Noah, versus Okada and two Chaos guys, and somebody that maybe could take the fall between them, more so than a singles match. But I thought it was very interesting that because that really came out of nowhere, like him calling out Okada. It was really unexpected.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about a fall guy in Chaos, Dylan, I'm sorry, but it's going to be Ashi.
Yeah, it could be him. It could be a junior. Like either one, really.
Yeah.
Nope, got a lot of fall guys. Here's the thing. We don't even have to worry about that. Because New Japan would win that match. If it came down to it. Yeah. Even if Yoshihashi was there, it would be fine.
So, yeah. with Noah. At least now they are doing this Misawa Memorial Show, and we're actually recording this on the anniversary of Mitsuharu Misawa's death, and they are doing a show the day thereafter, so after this episode is recorded, where they have Goshi Ozaki defending the GHC heavyweight title against Akitoshi Saito, which I think is a real nice thing to do, especially for Akitoshi Saito, who was in the ring when it happened, and Goshi Ozaki, of course, as well. And, like, 11 years after that, it's still something that I clearly remember. I still know where I was and what I did when I heard the news of Misawa dying. And now they... It's not exactly deemed as a Misawa memorial show, but everybody knows what it's supposed to be. And when they did this thing in the tag league where Saito and Inoue beat Go and Nakajima, at first most people thought why they were doing that, but a couple of weeks after that it dawned on me why they were doing that, and at least that made very clear sense from the beginning on.
Absolutely. If there is one positive to this title reign and everything going on, I think that's a really cool story. Very logical as well. It has real life meaning. At first, I'm pretty sure everyone was like, Saito going for the title? What? Mm-hmm. But then when you think about it, it's actually a really good story. So I really appreciate that as well, and I'm excited to watch that match. I think they're going to, if anything else, they're going to go all out to have a hard-hitting and good match. So I'm really looking forward to that, actually.
Yeah, me too. So there's good, there's not so good with Pro Wrestling Noah, but overall it's still impressive to see that they are a group that somewhat got the turnaround with so many new faces coming in, and with Nosawa being the booker, they have kind of they have moved on and they have became something new, and that is something that got a lot of new fans behind them.
I think being on the Wrestle Universe now, you know, as it's called, I think that probably get them some new fans. I think this story is not over yet, because it really feels like to me they haven't got their footing yet on what exactly this company is going forward. Because as you mentioned, you know, so I think we're gonna have to wait and see. We're not even, like I said, in All Japan, not everything's perfect, but it feels like you know what they are and where they're going. Noah, I feel like if we come back 6 months from now, who knows what this company is going to look like. Yeah. So I think that'll be very interesting.
Yeah, yeah, I see where you're coming from. We'll have to wait and see how that all turns out. You can probably check out our review of the Go Forward show on June 14 on a Spot Lariat on our Patreon at patreon.com/EasternLariat. So from Noah, I think we can now move on to my number one promotion. And I don't think that is a surprise,
yes,
since we've talked about most companies now. My number one company, very clearly, is DDT. I think they have gained the most from this entire lockdown situation and from the empty arena matches. The TV shows they put up every week, they were like 2 hours long each. They were from Shinjuku Face, and I always had a great time watching these shows. Much like you, I didn't really miss anything from No Fans being there, and I was highly entertained by most of the skits they put on, and I think I made the point on our last show too, that in its core, DDT is the best promotion, quote-unquote, to have a situation like this, because they can just go out there and do stuff without an audience, without making it feel weird and making it feel like a emergency situation of sorts. When they, for example, did the skits inside their dojo with the Street Fighter graphics coming up, or even the Takeshita versus Yoshihiko match they filmed. That is core DDT. That is not something they just did because of the lockdown. They could have done something like that either way. And that is what gave DDT the edge early on. And then something that other promotions did not have, Noah has now. They announced a couple of weeks ago that they would be having this Big Show on the 14th. But DDT very quickly made clear that all of their TV shows would be leading to the two-day Peter Pan show that was the replacement for the one-day Peter Pan show that was supposed to happen on that weekend. So they made sure to put all the build onto that show with all the matches being built up on the TV show. And I really liked that. I was a big fan of the two nights of Peter Pan. I was a big fan of some of the guys that were portrayed in the TV shows, and they gained some profile too. What do you think about DDT in the lockdown?
Yeah, speaking of the Patreon, I actually reviewed the entirety of the two nights there. I posted a show with both nights. The TV show, I don't think they really gained that much, to be honest, because I think DDT's style, if you like it, you like it, and if you don't, you don't. You know, like if that, it would be the same whether there's, and like you said, that is one thing that you could say, whether there's fans or not, I think you'll still like it the same. If you're a fan, I'm not really a traditional DDT fan as much as you are, but I appreciated some of the matches on the TV show, and I appreciated some of the creativity of the TV show, where I was a little bit more forgiving of anything crazy like that, because, like you said, it was building to this Peter Pan show. I particularly enjoyed the Takeshita and Yoshihiko All Out, All Dead gimmick that they had. Their match.
I love that too. I did not expect you to mention that one first, to be quite honest.
That was the one that got me. And then they had this Noah feud as well, with Kenno and Kongo coming in.
Oh yeah.
They built this match on the first night. I thought that was so goofy. Like, and not in like a silly DDT way. I think like for them to put all this build up into this and then have this match where Hao gets to win somehow. And then it's just like the war is over, pretty much. After this, like seemingly, it felt like they had so much more to that story, and it just ended up they did the match, and that was it. It was like Takagi's promo was like, "You do your thing, and I'll do mine."
That made absolutely no sense at all. I mean,
yeah.
The entire hook of it was that Kenno is loyal to Lilith, and from there. They built the story that now Sanshiro Takagi is the president of both promotions, but he didn't do anything. It's not like he's terrorizing Pro Wrestling Noah now.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
I like to think this was a huge criticism of that Kaz Fujita and Go match, and somehow he blames Takagi for this. Like I said, that's what he should have cut a promo and said, we don't want this style of wrestling in Noah. And I said this on the Patreon show, I feel like this is a very natural feud for DDT to have with so many type of people. Like a serious guy coming in and saying, screw this comedy bullcrap, I represent real wrestling, and I hate this whole company. But this was the first time that we've ever seen anything like this, and it just kind of like petered out with no conclusion, no fanfare. I mean, the match was fine.
Yep.
Like the trios match, it was fine match.
I mean, Takagi tried to run over Kenno with a bicycle, so that was fun.
Yes, and used the boxes, and Kenno just stomped the box that he used there. All of Kongo were there in their wrestling attire, too. I really like that. But, yeah, it was a fine match, though. Like, whatever. But the point is, the way they blew it off was just kind of... I wasn't a big fan of that. Mm. This was the first night, too. They had that hardcore match, the three-way match. What'd you think of that?
I mean, I am a big fan of Shuma Katsumata, especially since he has adopted this Joker gimmick. I think he gained a lot from that. He didn't really get any wins or anything in this lockdown period, but he still somewhat gained a lot because he's now not only... this Shuma Katsumata guy, but he has a gimmick and he has something going for him. So I really enjoyed the match, and I enjoyed that he was kind of the underdog in this role with Daisuke Sasaki being in there and Isami Kodaka and all the hardcore spots they did. So that was a good one. The problem, though, is I still have no idea why we have this title. And I got to correct myself. At first, I had an idea why we had this title, But now, I don't have an idea why we have this title when it is just another Extreme title.
Yeah, I that's what I kind of see, like a hardcore title. It just feels like, hey, we don't have Sasaki in the main event, so let's give him a title. Like, here it is.
And there was this three-way match with Chris Brooks in it. And, Naomi Yoshimura was in that too. And Daisuke Sasaki got the pinfall over Yoshimura because Chris Brooks did the praying mantis bomb on him. And then Sasaki rolled Brooks out to pin Yoshimura. And Brooks never came back again to get another chance at the title yet. So that is something that I didn't understand either. So everything surrounding that title is a big mystery to me right now.
Yeah, I didn't love that match. I know a lot of people probably would be more into the hardcore stuff than me, especially Sasaki. Every time I watch him, it's like the same story, pretty much with me and him and my feelings on him. So I really wasn't as into the match. But I did like Joker Shunma. I agree with you. He's somebody that really stepped up in the match and on the TV. I have to say, I'm noted as not being a huge comedic wrestling fan, but on this night one especially, I thought both of the big comedic matches hit big for me. The first one, you had Pokatan and the debut of NJPW that's coming for DT and TJPW. Of course, Niigata Joshi. Yes, Niigata Joshi Pro Wrestling that has been started off. So I thought that whole segment was very funny.
Absolutely.
Yes. And the main event, like...
Before we go to the main event, I want to quickly ask you what you think about Jun Akiyama in DDT.
Oh, yeah. Akiyama. I mentioned this again on the Patreon, but, like, even in his home company, he's not really as much of a serious wrestler anymore. And this is a me problem more than a DDT or an Akiyama problem. I always want to see the Akiyama I want to see, like, which is, like, that guy, you know, like the Akiyama who's a great worker. But he's not really that in All Japan anymore. Here they had a story where they had it against multiple people, him with Watase that he teamed with, but also they teased Yuki Ino after the match, which I think Akiyama against either of those guys that he faced in the Akito and Ino match was good. But the tag match really didn't click for me, to be honest. I'm not a huge fan of Watase at this point, and I just felt like this... I want to see what they do in the singles match, and I'll hold my opinion on that. You know, I'll give it more of a chance, but I didn't love the tag match, to be honest.
Watase seems so lost. Yeah. Ever since they did the story with Shigehiro Irie being the Japanese version of Sami Callihan and Mitsuki Watase being his Y4K, and when Irie then left, Watase was left with nothing to do, basically.
Yeah.
And that threw him back a lot. He never since got traction again. They somewhat just use him in different roles, and he's most of the times eating the pinfalls, so I'm not really a fan of this either. Akiyama, I think, sees something in him. They positioned him with Watase quite some times now, so I'm hopeful that maybe with Akiyama they can do something with Watase, because the guy is pretty good, but they don't really give him a role.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. They at least set up some storylines with him, which is better than the Noah guys, which they ended it right away. But yeah, I look forward to that. And also, before we get to the main event, I just wanted to shout out the Joshi wrestlers both nights, but particularly on night one, you had Ano and Harukaze, which I thought both did a great job in their work. I really enjoyed that intergender match also involving Hiroshi Yamato and Keisuke Ishii. Mm-hmm. Ano particularly impressed me with her mean streak. And if you ever see her wrestle, you know what she is. She is such a great heel character for Joshi Pro Res. And I've always enjoyed Harukaze, even when she was like really young in Stardom. I thought she was pretty underrated. She used her armbar offense to very well here. I thought it was a really good match worth checking out if you're a fan of. That was one of the better pure wrestling matches. That might have been my second favorite match on this on this opening show, because I didn't really like the hardcore match, and the six-man match didn't really hit for me either.
Yeah, well, this show was more of the entertainment/hardcore side of DDT, whereas the other show focused more on the wrestling side of DDT. So yeah, I agree with that it was not the strongest wrestling wise, but entertainment wise it was good. And I want to throw out Yuki Ino as a guy that I can really picture in an upcoming tournament of All Japan Pro Wrestling. Like, the guy impresses me more and more. His haka thing that he did with Akiyama, of course, was a comedy spot, but he is really good. Last year, he had some great singles matches, and I can see him in one of those tournaments coming up, even the Champion Carnival.
Yeah, I don't love his comedy, but as a worker, he's okay. Like, I think he'd be good in All Japan. Actually, probably a better fit there than DDT. Like I said, I think his comedy he's not the greatest at, but as a worker, he's pretty solid. So I'd like to see him take that and take a step up going forward.
Main event. The match. Tokyo 2020. Last man standing match. Konosuke Takeshita versus Yoshihiko. It was the Boneyard all over again.
As soon as that happened, I knew that this was going to be awesome.
Yes. We didn't really have an idea what this match would be. They just named it. Of course, we knew that it would be a last man standing match, but it could have been in the arena too. But instead, they made the much better choice to film it on the graveyard.
Yes, and like much like the original Boneyard match, which out of all of them, I think that was the best cinematic wrestling match. Every one that came after it, I think, has been considerably worse and worse until you get to the AEW Stadium one was okay. That was very DDT inspired. I liked a lot of it, even though I just thought it went a little too long. But this was so much better, in my opinion, of managing its time. This was not an overly long, if you could even call it a match, but there was so much, like so much into it that was so funny. One of my favorite spots was after Takeshita ran away and he had the visions of
And let's go a little bit back because the scenes of Takeshita running away were so funnily filmed because they made it look like Takeshita was running away, but he wasn't really running. Because Yoshihiko, of course, had to keep up with him. And the low-budget production of it made that perfectly clear, but it was a complete spoof on the cinematic wrestling that has come along through WrestleMania and all. So that totally worked out. And once again, it's DDT to its core. That is the DNA of DDT. You can just do it and get away with it, and fans get a laugh out of it. And then there were these Yoshihiko faces, just like you mentioned. They were somewhat haunting poor Takeshita, and he was just running away, and Yoshihiko would not let him get away, and he would always return, even after Takeshita. Then, after he made it to this rooftop, he threw him off the roof, and seconds later, Yoshihiko just returned.
Like I said, there's so much in this match. You have to watch it if you can. I think anybody can enjoy this, even if you're not a fan of DDT. Like, this was so goofy how it did. And I mentioned this. We were talking about this on one of the Tenzan shows. I suddenly brought this up. But I feel like the low-budget values made it so much better than if they had actually tried to, like, make this realistic or something like that. It had to be stupid. Like, that was the only way to approach this. It had to be cheesy. The visions look like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they put less than $100 into this match overall. And I loved, even early on, even without them doing anything, just the part where they started grappling, like Takeshita started this technical stuff on the pavement, I thought was very funny. And then he threw him into a tree and had to get him down, of course, in the middle of this match. And you mentioned the part on the roof, which, at that point, too, we should mention that he had tried to call Yuki Ino again on the phone, but Yoshihiko had, when they cut to this predator-like camera that he had, so Yoshihiko is like, what is he in the canon of DDT? Is he an alien? Some sort of a killing machine that was created in a laboratory somewhere? What is Yoshihiko? DDT fans, let me know, because obviously everyone knows him at all, but what is he really?
I think he's whatever they want him to be.
Yeah, that's the best way to describe it.
I mean, he has the Undertaker music. He's everything and nothing at the same time.
Wow, that's so philosophical.
Deep, right? I know.
Like you said, he got thrown off the balcony and came up all bloody, too, and teleported behind Takeshita somehow. So again, alien powers, ghosts, supernatural, who knows what he is. Then he ripped out Takeshita's eye.
But Takeshita, of course, is so strong, he put it back on his own.
That was just like me when I had my tooth cap knocked out.
It's exactly the same.
Yes, exactly the same. Like I said, I shoved it back in. He just shoved his eye back in. So everyone's bloody at this point. The violence has gone to a whole new level. I really hope that they had some kind of pad when Takeshita was like bouncing all around this thing, yeah. Like when he did the destroyer for himself. Like, don't kill yourself for this match, man. So on there.
On the topic of killing. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. He had someone else to kill in this match. So do you want to do the honors on the finish of this wonderful spectacle?
Yes, so he had no choice left but to put gasoline all over Yoshihiko and burn him. So he had the lighter, and he went to light up Yoshihiko. Yoshihiko, it seemed like he was getting the lighter and would burn Takeshita himself, but another fight broke out, and in the end, there was this huge explosion where Yoshihiko got apparently killed in. And the funniest thing...
And by huge explosion, I mean like ridiculously cheesy fire graphics that they put up on.
And the greatest part about that was, of course, that after the explosion, Yuki yes. Ino came with baseball bats.
Yes, and I love the way they shot this segment, because before that happened, he had this triumphant pose. I sent you the picture in our DMs. He had this triumphant pose as the sunrise came up. Oh, yeah. It was perfect.
There was one of my favorite parts of the match, too, that they began filming that in the middle of the night, and they filmed the final scenes when the sun rose over Tokyo. That was great.
Yeah, so then Ino came in with the bats, and Takeshita, this was so goofy, and he was just like, he just laughed off this whole thing and was like, hey, man, let's go to the gym.
He had the blood all and, over his shoulders.
Yes, and then the final scene of the show happened where the war was over. Or was it? Yoshihiko's eyes came alive to end the show.
Amazing.
Wonderful. I love this match so much. Like, this is one of the best comedy matches that DDT's ever done, absolutely. In my opinion.
Absolutely.
I thought this was phenomenal. Like, easily the highlight of night one. Like I said, I like the intergender match, but this was great. I'll never forget this match. Like I said, even when year-end stuff comes, I'm not saying it's a match of the year or anything, but for a comedic style like this, I will always remember that scene of him posing triumphantly after blowing up Yoshihiko.
Yeah, that was just great. We have this show at 7.58 in our database, and the second day we have at 8.15. And I want to go right to the main event, because, of course, that's the big talking point. I thought the main event was a great match, just because they did everything that I had expected what they would do in that match. Callbacks to the match they had in December when Masato Tanaka won the D-King Grand Prix in the finals over Tetsuya Endo, and where he scarred him with a table, which led to this nasty scar on Tetsuya Endo's thigh. And they brought it back here in this match. Tetsuya Endo selling his leg. That was great, I thought. And overall, just exactly what I was expecting them to do. Masato Tanaka, he is great in this role. Tetsuya Endo was great in his role. I thought this was the best match of the show by far. But then again, we have it at 9.41 in our database. And I gotta say, I think that is a little high, because it's not like Tanaka and Endo did this outstandingly great match because they didn't exactly reinvent the wheel. They just did what everybody expected they would do. If you know what I'm not saying the match was not good. I called it great, but I was surprised that it was rated so highly.
First of all, I have to say, I was surprised to hear you say that it was by far the best match. I thought the tag match was better that came before it.
Yeah,
that was a phenomenal like tag match.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought that was easily the best match on these two shows. So we have a little disagreement there, but I like the main event too. I thought they were heading towards having a really great match. And I haven't, like, we've seen a lot of stuff online about Tanaka being the wrestler of the year and all that. Mm. I haven't loved some of his matches, like Mao and Takeshita. I thought could have been better.
Yeah.
You know, And he's good, don't get me wrong, and I like that he's had a good reign with varied opponents, but I just don't buy him at that level, like Wrestler of the Year, all, you know, great matches. So here, I thought they were going there. Everything about this match was a great match, in my opinion. Up to the point where he hit the Diamond Dust and then had the splash, and Endo had this kick out at one, but then sold it afterwards, where it was like a very, like, King's Road style of sell, where he, like, no-sold it and then sold it. Yep. Like, so I thought that was really good. Then the problem is, all this legwork that had happened, Endo kips up and immediately hits a lariat, then hits a handspring back kick, which he sold earlier that he couldn't do because of his injury. He's doing all this bullcrap now that he wasn't able to do earlier on. Hit the torture rack bomb, shooting star presses. It's like all the other stuff that happened in the first 20 minutes got totally blown off.
But that is also something, Dylan, that is a regular trope in wrestling, which can be explained, in my opinion, where you got the adrenaline rush all of a sudden and you forget the pain. That is something that I can buy. I know it might sound unlogical or illogical in some situations, but it is a very wrestling-esque trope.
I think it was fine how he did it with the no-sell on the one. Like, he kicked out at one after the big splash. Mm-hmm. I really like that. Like, I thought that was a very logical no-sell. And everything about this was so good, but then he blew it. Like I said, again, it's like why wasn't this happening earlier then? You know, he sold this all great earlier, and it all kind of went out the window to have this ending stretch, which I guess he kind of needed to win.
Yeah.
For me, that took it down. I'm not saying it's a bad match or anything, because I thought the first 20 minutes or so of this was really great. Like, I thought easily Tanaka's best work. And like I said, I've been high on, but he's kind of lowered my feeling on him the last year or so. But here, I thought he was really on top of his game. I just thought the last 5 or 6 minutes took it down a notch for me, whereas I thought the tag match was a great match throughout. I thought that whole match was awesome.
Yeah, talk about the tag match.
Yeah, so this was the KOD tag titles match with Nautilus team of Naomi Yoshimura and Yuki Ueno taking on Strong Hearts, Lindemann and T-Hawk. So I've always been a huge fan of Ueno. Like, all the way dating back to DNA, when everyone loved Higuchi, I was always saying, hey, Ueno is just as good. And I love Higuchi too, obviously. But here, and Yoshimura, I think, has been a great young guy for DDT. It's no wonder that these are great tag team champions. So they had built up this match on the TV shows with Strong Hearts, you know, teaming with Damnation. And
the Damn feuding Hearts.
The Damn Hearts, of course. And they'd feuded with Disaster Box leading up to this match, pretty much. So I really loved Ueno, especially against T-Hawk. I thought their match was great. And I loved, like, when they started off the match with their more... they had, like, more of a technical style earlier on. So I really liked that. Then Yoshimura came in and started wrecking stuff, pretty much. And I loved... It fit Lindemann's character so much that he constantly wanted to try and slam Yoshimura, even though he was much, much smaller. T-Hawk, I loved every bit of his strike exchanges, and I mentioned this again on the Patreon, where in Dragon Gate, he was always a great Chop King type of person back when he was still there. And here he had some great chops here in this match, I thought. And it felt like he really brought out a sadistic side to him, where it's like, he loved beating the hell out of these young guys with his chops. And everything built up to a great finish, I thought, where it looked like, you know, it looked like the Strong Hearts team had the beat with some good double team moves, and suddenly they ended up teaming up on Lindemann. They took out T-Hawk with a big backdrop, and then they double teamed Lindemann with this double team Uranagi, and then Ueno hit the Ranhei, which one of my time favorite moves. Although his version is a little different. I don't know if he botched it, but it was kind of like a good botch because it ended up into a
It seemed like a spiked version of the original Ranhei. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was much more of a spike version, but I thought it looked devastating. So it totally worked. Like, even if it wasn't on purpose, I thought this match was a great, great match for 20 minutes. I really have no criticism at all from any of the four. I thought all four men totally delivered.
And I mean, it was such an easy storyline to follow along with the Damn Hearts beating Disaster Box for the six-man tag title. And Disaster Box just could not beat the Damn Hearts in the last couple of months. And it continued here, and in the six-man tag match, Lindemann got the pinfall over Yuki Ueno, which was a great upset for him. And I gotta say, I love all the four guys in this match. I thought it was a great match. Strong Hearts in this incarnation are the best they can be with Lindemann and T-Hawk. They were outstanding here in this situation. And they used the six-man tag title match to the build-up for the tag title, and it was just done so well. A really great semi-main event for the show.
Yeah, it was such a logical story. Like, very basic. You know, you wouldn't think of it for a DDT-style thing. But I loved it. Like you said, all four of those guys are like... that honestly, that was one of my favorite matches of this whole empty arena period. I'm almost certain that would be in my top three that has happened so far. I absolutely thought it was a great, great match. And the main event, like I said, I liked the main event. It was good. I do think the score on cage matches is a little high.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's like a match of the year, like classic level match. And I don't think this really hit that point. And even then, they teased afterwards where they would have a rematch in front of the fans. And that's kind of where I think. I think they had a really good first act between them. And I would love to see them maybe cut down on some of the stuff I criticized and have the fans there to maybe elevate it and maybe even bring that adrenaline up a little bit more between them. So I'd love to see a second part between them. I didn't mean to sound too negative on it. I thought it was a really great match for the first part, but just the last part lost me a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was still a really good finish. And I thought, well, a really great 1-2 punch. Really a last three matches, too. I like the intergender match
with Asuka. I was going to ask you about that, too, because as we have it, you said it's rated a little high, and that's where we agree on with the main event and the third match from the top, Harashima and Naomi Chimaru Fuji against Asuka and Mao. We have it at 7.47. That is maybe rated a little low because that was a great tag match too.
I'm with you. I liked it. I thought Harashima worked great with both of the opponents. I thought Asuka worked really great with both of the opponents too. I thought, you know, they all did a great job. And I've said it before that I think a lot of people are a little bit higher on Mao than me. A lot of people really peg him, and it seems to me that DDT desperately, desperately, desperately wants him to be Kota Ibushi.
Yeah, but it's not.
Like,
he is not, of course. No, he will never be.
Yeah.
They have to make adjustments at some point, because that will, if they continue to do that, that could break him as a character.
Yeah, I'm kind of down on him, but I thought he did a good job in this match in more of a tag team role. Mm-hmm. I thought he did really solid here, and a lot of his most famous matches were teaming with Mike Bailey as well, so I think maybe he's better off in a tag team setting than maybe in...
Well, there's a good comparison to Kota Ibushi too. That was him earlier in his career too. He was mostly in a tag team setting.
And that's true, but he could stand out on his own. Yeah. Even in 2010, like 10 years ago, I thought he was really clearly the best worker in DDT at that time, or a main event level overall package. You have Harashima here, the old guard of DDT, so anytime you see him, it's a good thing. I thought he worked good with everybody, like I said. One thing I really noted in this match was Akiyama doing commentary on Mara Fuji's match. Yeah, that must have been kind of weird. You know, that's kind of
what I was thinking. Yeah, it was
a good.
Can only happen in DDT, such a thing.
Yeah, that's true. Mark Fuji did work at All Japan in the Champion Carnival. I'm sure they're all cool, but I thought it was a good match, though. I agree with you. It was a very, very strong third from the top match.
About this match, I really like the mean streak that Harashima and Maro Fuji showed, especially when they worked with Asuka. Especially Maro Fuji seemed to have the time of his life just working with her. And, throwing their knees around with Asuka. They did this finishing spot where they did the Somato and then the Ko from Maro Fuji. That looked great. And whenever Asuka is there, that's another thing that I really like with DDT. I made the point last year too when Asuka came into DDT the first time. Maybe even 2 years ago, I'm not sure when that was. But that always was a great fit too. And I really would have liked to see her more in DDT. She was in the Fyre Festival last year too, so give me more of Asuka working in 01, working in DDT, basically working all over the place.
Asuka's a great worker, really enjoy her talent. I think she's got a lot of sympathy on her right now with, you know, she's always had that with her, being a transgender wrestler in, you know, Joshi and in men's wrestling too. I think you always have that little bit of sympathy that people want to root for her. And now with this Hana Kimura thing, obviously her best friend, she came across looking really heartfelt and all of that. And I think she has a lot to her as a huge, like, to me, a fan favorite. But her in-ring style is so heelish, like, a lot of the times. And even here, you had the spot where Mara Fuji tried to help her up afterwards, and then Asuka just slapped him as hard as possible.
Yeah.
So I think she's got, like, an interesting character arc that she could portray if she was to... Settle down somewhere. I'd like to see her have a home base somewhere, whether it's DDT or a Joshi company or wherever. I think she could be a great contributor wherever she goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to shout out one more match on this card because I really liked it and I love that they got so much time. They got 15 minutes. And the second match of that show, it was a TJP offer match. Shoko Nakajima and Yuka Sakazaki teaming with Mio Yamashita defeated Noroka Tenma, Yuki Aino, and Rika Tatsumi. And I thought this was an absolute home run for Tokyo Yoshi Pro because they went out there, they threw all the bombs they had, everybody got everything in, and I especially thought that in this match, the Bakuretsu sisters really looked great.
Yeah, Tenma is somebody I've always been a fan of, particularly Nodoka. I've always thought that she was one of the most underrated people in Tokyo Joshi Pro. She never really gets the opportunities that some of the other girls have, some of the fanfare that the other girls have, but I've always thought she was a top-tier talent in the company. And the Bakuretsu sisters, along with Tatsumi, they went up really against the A team of TJPW. These are their three top stars, pretty much Shoko, Sakazaki, Yu, along with the DDT girls, Saki Akai and Maki Ito, which they had their own match. But I agree with you here. This match was really good, way up there for an undercard match. And how crazy is it that these six people have not wrestled in the last few months because TJPW hasn't been doing shows. So here they come in, they haven't missed a beat at all. I thought Yamashita especially looked really strong here. I loved her kick-based offense. I love her attire that she has going on right now. I think a big upgrade over her old look. And she had a great reverse crescent kick to set up the finish. They had a double 619 set up to the crescent kick, then the magical girl splash. Really good finish. Everyone looked good. I particularly liked Miyu and Naruko Tenma. I thought their segments were really strong, but all six women really delivered strong in this match, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. So DDT, and especially now Wrestle Universe, is a great value, especially with both Noah and DDT being on there and with wrestling returning to a more normal state, as we said earlier in this show. So I can only recommend, if you have not checked it out, Wrestle Universe is a great value for 900 yen. And yeah, anything else on DDT, Don?
I thought it's amazing. This might be the best show, series of shows when it came to DDT comedy hitting for me that I can remember.
Yeah, crazy, right?
I love the Pokatan match. I really love the main event of night one. And even this might be the best Dino match ever, which didn't happen. I love this whole storyline.
Oh, great. Oh, that was so great. Yes.
Yes. Yes. They've been building up for weeks on TV with Dino and Makoto Oishi. And every time they would have a match, Oishi wouldn't, they wouldn't have it and it would usually be for increasingly stupid reasons, pretty much. So this time, they announced that basically Dino was in the ring and he checked his phone and he got a text message saying that Oishi's baby was crying, so he wasn't going to be there. But then the referee was like, okay, I guess you're the winner. And Dino was like, no, give him 3 minutes. He'll be here, I promise.
And they did this great video package, basically looking back at the highlights of their shared career, because they have been longtime tag team partners in DDT. And it seemed like that this would be Makoto Ishii's great moment. And Dylan, what happened?
Yes, the triumphant moment. But instead, he finally got to the arena. He was ready. He was ready to finally have this match. He ran to the ring and then tripped and hurt himself. And that was it. The match was called off. He was injured. Shane Yoshihashi, but with more with his leg here.
There was such a stupid thing. There was such easy comedy, but it totally hit with me. I couldn't help but laugh about it.
I love this. I thought this was so funny. This was one of the best comedy segments. Again, they were on a huge roll. Whoever booked these two shows deserves an A+ in terms of comedy. I hope that this match doesn't happen they hold this off until next week. This should be Dino's role on every show. And they should come up with new ways every single time to have Oishi not wrestle. Next And when they have the full arena, the 10,000 people arena they were going to do, they finally have their match. Now, imagine if that happened. That would be a huge pop if that ever happened. And it could be anything. It could be the worst match ever. It doesn't even matter. But this storyline I completely love and think is awesome. So that was another highlight for me of night two.
Absolutely. So as I said, check out DDT. They really deserve all the attention. And from there, there is one thing that I want to address, Dylan, before we move over to New Japan Pro Wrestling. And that is the new promotion that is apparently going to start in the fall, led by former Pro Wrestling Noah owners, Lidded.
Well, if there's one thing that I know we both agree that the Japanese wrestling scene needs, it's another company.
I mean, I love that everybody made the same joke at the same time when they read the announcement. Everybody was just like, oh, Wrestle 2, okay.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone knows that that's where our things where that's where it's going. And they already have, they've brought in a good amount of people from Wrestle 1 at this point. Yeah. And
I actually, Dylan, yeah. I came up with somewhat of a story because, of course, much like you, I was wondering where this would lead and who is going to be on the roster of that promotion, except for just all the Wrestle 1 guys that didn't get picked up by All Japan. So I thought about what I said about Nosawa earlier. And, you know, Takashi Sugiura, he was very critical about Nosawa bringing in new guys all the time. And he specifically told him to not bring any more new friends to the roster. But Nosawa did, nonetheless. And he brought in Kasayashi. And they also, as I said, brought in Seki Yoshioka. And Seki doesn't really have a role in the company, and he's losing a lot. So my idea was that everybody all of a sudden gets so fed up with Nosawa bringing his friends in constantly that this new Lidded promotion would be some sort of a way for Nosawa to have his friends be in a promotion. And like that Seki Yoshioka would say, okay, I don't really like it here in Noah. They don't give me a chance. I want to go to a different group. And he just goes to this new Lidded group. Or for example, Kongo. They could just say, this Lidded group is now our mainstay. And we, of course, will still wrestle in Noah, but just defiantly. So that would be my idea, that this could be somewhat of a group within the group.
Is this Wrestle 2 or Tokyo Gurentai 2?
Well, basically Pro Wrestling Noah is Tokyo Gurentai now.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's just kind of crazy, this Nosawa offshoot. But I think, ultimately, I don't know if it'll go exactly like that, but
that's
just
an idea that popped up in my head earlier, and I found it funny that it could go down that way.
Yeah, I think, ultimately, it'll be some kind of Noah offshoot, like this mm-hmm. second promotion. Like, whatever the plan is for this, it's going to be some kind of offshoot of that, and we're going to see some guys work there and cross-promote and all that bullcrap. I don't know what to think about it. Like I said, until we know, and Nosawa, he still, isn't he, or wasn't he on some kind of position in Lidded?
Yes. Kasayashi too.
Yep.
And Riki Choshu, of course, yeah.
Yeah. See, so all these guys have Lidded positions, so it makes sense that they would try and do something like this. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what their thinking is, like from selling Noah to start this smaller company. I like to see what their plans are for them to give a statement on what exactly the mission of this company is, because sadly to me, Wrestle 1, it had its run. It felt like it was time for them to go, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that there was less crowd.
And that is basically what the reaction of most people that I follow on Twitter was when they read the announcement. We just had this situation where the guys that in Wrestle 1 were wrestling themselves now are in another position and wrestle new guys. And with Wrestle 1 being gone, there was talent that could go to companies that had a chance to, or have a chance to be more fruitful than Wrestle 1. And I don't really think that there is a big market for another company, especially not now.
What's the upside of this company, you know?
Straight up, like, the same upside as Wrestle 1 had.
Exactly. Maybe even less.
Maybe like, less.
So, like, you know, we don't even know. Like I said, my gut is telling me that this isn't going to be a bit, like a major level promotion or anything like that, even if it's 11 plus the one. It's just going to be a minor, it's going to be more or less a secondary group to Noah, like their version of Ganbare Pro.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, the best thing that could happen would be it being like something like Kenta Kobashi's Fortune Dream. That would be the best, where they get people from other rosters in and do somewhat of these big super shows. But I really have trouble imagining that this would be a regular running promotion with regular tours.
Also, maybe this is something that could be on Wrestle Universe. You know, they might want another company in there, so they just said, like, look, like, start the second company. Like, we're not going to go through the hassle of buying something small. We're just going to start our own thing. You know, that maybe that has something to do with it. They want another company. But that's kind of what I feel from this. Like, this is going to be their version of what Ganbare Pro is to DDT, pretty much. Like, that's kind of what I feel like.
And they said that Kiyoshi Tamura would be involved. He was briefly shown on one Noah show where he was sitting in the first row. He also has a position with Lidded, of course. Remains to be seen what his role is going to be.
Yeah, Kenno cut a promo on him, said he wanted to have a match between them, and I was all for that. Bring me Tamura. Like, let's do it. I'm all for more of his kind in wrestling, but I don't know what the plan is. Like I said, we're so far out anyway. Once we have more definitive plans that they say that they're going to do, I will be able to analyze it. I think both of us will be able to analyze it a bit better. But my gut is saying that this won't be a big deal ultimately. If Tamura has a match on there, then I'll probably really like it. I will say that much. If they do something like that, that's probably my style of promotion. But if it's more Tokyo Gurentai stuff, we already had Tokyo Gurentai, you know, and it wasn't that successful. Like, so I don't know why we need a second one.
Well, something we have more open plans on definitely is New Japan Pro Wrestling. So I think we can move on to them. Because, as you said, Pro Wrestling returns, and New Japan Pro Wrestling, they always said that they want wrestling to return as the last sport. That didn't really happen, because wrestling never went away, basically.
But remember how skeptical I was about that whole comment when that happened? I was very skeptical. I know he got a lot of publicity for that, but I wasn't buying it. And yeah, you're right. Unfortunately, it didn't really turn out that way. But they still can bring hope for people. Maybe in Tanahashi's vision, New Japan is the only true wrestling.
Maybe. But at a press conference this past Tuesday, Naoki Sugabayashi, he was there to announce the return of New Japan Pro Wrestling after the Japanese government had lifted the state of emergency for most of the prefectures at the end of May. They will now slowly start to return to regular shows, starting this coming Monday with the Together Project Special, which is kind of a New Year Dash-like show, where they will announce the card at the beginning of the show, and then they will return with a New Japan Cup. And they mentioned on this press conference that they had cancelled 53 events total since the end of February, and now they will be returning with the New Japan Cup that was cancelled amidst all the corona cancellations in March and April. They will do the first round from June 16 to June 23. They will have the second round on June 24 and on July 1st. And from there, they go to the quarterfinals. And then for the finals of the New Japan Cup, finally in Osaka Jo Hall on July 11, they will allow a crowd to return to a New Japan show with one-third of the capacity of Osaka Jo Hall, so it would be about 3,000 to 4,000 people, I believe. And also, the same goes for the event the day after, July 12th in Osaka Jo Hall, where Tetsuya Naito defends both titles against the winner of the New Japan Cup. First of all, what did you think about the announcement?
Great. It got a lot of buzz. And I thought they really handled the scheduling of this very well, where they would have the cup winner and then immediately go to the title shot. So I thought they really handled it well, and it got a lot of good publicity for them online, and I think a lot of people were waiting on them to come back as well. So I think everything about it was handled exactly as I would have done it if I were in charge.
And I mean, I made the point on Twitter. Naoki Sugawayashi, in my opinion, was a perfect guy to present this press conference. He always does these press conferences, and then they have some other wrestlers, or he's not a wrestler, they have some wrestlers state their opinion. But Naoki Sugawayashi, in my opinion, is the most believable executive of any wrestling company worldwide. He literally is Mr. No Bullshit. He just goes out there, he just reads what is necessary, he just reads out the core messages they have to bring across, and that is it. There is no wrestling bullshit. He doesn't want to sell something to you that is not there. He's just an executive that does his job. That is why he was the perfect guy, in my opinion, to do this.
Yeah, he did. He did fine in his role. Definitely a little bit better than Harold, I would say, when he had that video online.
I mean, Harold, at the same time, that's what I was saying. He tried to... Maybe he did not try to get himself over, but at the same time, like by this presentation, he unwillingly maybe brought himself over. Mm-hmm. Tsukabayashi, he doesn't have the intention to do so. He's just a businessman.
And plus, Harold had that little run where he had that one appearance on the show that mm-hmm. everyone really reacted negatively to a couple of years ago. So I don't know really what his intentions were, but as a public speaker, I agree with you. Sugabayashi was quite a bit of an improvement, I would say.
So let's go over the first round matches here. We start on June 16 with Togi Makabe versus Yota Tsuji, Tomohiro Ishii versus El Desperado, Toru Yano versus Yado, and Tomoaki Honma versus Hiromu Takahashi. June 17, Katsushika Okada versus Gedo. Finally! The man gets his hands on Gedo.
Great.
Yuji Nagata versus Minoru Suzuki. That is a really great matchup there. Yuya Uemura versus Yoshinobu Kanemaru and Gabriel Kidd versus Taichi Ishimori. June 22, Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Taichi. Kota Ibushi versus Zack Sabre Jr. Ryusuke Taguchi versus Sanada and Sho versus Shingo Takagi. And the final first round matches on June 23. Hiroyoshi Tenzan versus Yoshihashi, Yo versus Bushi, Satoshi Kojima versus Evil, and Hiroki Goto versus Yujiro Takayashi. Dylan, you on Twitter already made the point that you think that this lineup is an improvement to the original lineup they did.
Oh, absolutely. I think a lot of the guys, like I said, I mean, there are a couple of guys, you know, I don't really need to see Jado and Kanemaru in the New Japan Cup. I'm not living and dying over that, really. But a lot of the guys, I thought, to have the juniors in this scenario to replace the old guys, like, that was kind of their move here. Any of the foreign guys that they couldn't use, and Kenta, for whatever reason, was pulled from it.
Kenta, I think he's living in the U.S., so he can't come over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so anybody outside of the country that they couldn't use, they replaced them with junior heavyweights, pretty much.
And Young Lions.
Yeah, and Young Lions, too. Yeah, you had the Gabriel Kidd, Umura, Tsuji.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. The juniors and the Young Lions. People who wouldn't have been in the tournament before are now in. So I thought they did a great job. And most importantly, no matter who it was, having Hiromu in, I think, is worth whatever changes you would have had to have made anyway.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. That got my attention right away, that he's in.
Well, he would have to be in if Yo was going to be in.
Sure, of course. But still, him being in, that is something that got my attention right away, because they still have this Naito and Hiromu match, right? They can do.
That's right. And that Hiromu has probably been their top guy when it comes to the quarantine and the lockdown. He's been one of the top people online promoting his stuff, about his match, doing stuff for them online on social media. So he's really gotten his face out there as one of the main people in this company. So to have him in there, like you said, there's a lot of interesting ways. And the way the bracket just so happens to play out, you could definitely justify anything you want with him, the way they've set things up. So I think it's very interesting to have him in. the juniors, you get some good shots for people that wouldn't have otherwise got it. I love to see somebody like Ishimori, who, as a longtime junior heavyweight, has never really gotten a shot, now get this chance in the tournament here. I thought it was a really nice thing, a really nice sentiment. Someone like Sho facing Shingo, I think, is a great addition. So I think it's really improved from where it was in March, to be honest with you. I think it's a pretty big improvement.
The downside of it is that Hinare and Finlay, yeah, once again don't get their chances. It's almost like the universe has something against them. It's crazy how whenever they seem to get a shot, something is in the way of that.
Man, you're totally right. I hate that. I listed it on Twitter. I found everybody who was out and got put in the tournament and got replaced. But those two were the two that stood out to me as well. Even more than someone like Ospreay, who, you know, a lot of people think as a Wrestler of the Year caliber performer. But he'll always have his shots. These guys, Finlay and Hinari, they're always getting screwed over, like you said, well, just by a force of nature, not on purpose. But whether it's injury or this virus pandemic, it really hurts to see that. And Hinari especially had a huge match versus Ishii in the main event that got taken away. So yeah. I really feel for both those guys, Hinari and Finlay.
Oh, man. That's unfortunate. But we can't change it right now. So for Finlay, I guess it's the same situation as for Kenta. He can't return from the US right now. Hinari must be in New Zealand right now, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is what we got right now here. And Dylan, what are some of the matches that you would want to see in the tournament? Just what the bracket would allow us to see.
To jump off my point that I made earlier, I think Hiromu versus Ishii would be a great match that,
yep,
I would like to see.
Got that listed as well.
Match. Yeah, I think that's right away. That's one that jumps out. Honestly, I could see Makabe beating Ishii if the goal is to have Hiromu advance into the final four.
Yeah,
I think they would be. So I think it's not a lock that match happens, but I would love to see it personally.
Yeah, that could happen. I mean, I got Ishii versus Hiromu listed as well. There's one match from that part of the bracket that I would love to see too, but I don't think that it will happen because Yoda Tsuji is not beating Togi Makabe in the first round.
No.
But the prospect of having a Tomohiro Ishii versus Yoda Tsuji match, I really like that idea.
I hope that this format continues somehow when the juniors and the young lions get again. Because where else are you going to have an Ishii versus Desperado match?
Yeah.
You know, and that one's going to happen, so we know for sure. Hiromu and Honma, like, that's a super random matchup there. So I think that this is a very interesting opportunity.
Two daredevils, Dylan.
Yeah, two crazy guys pretty much in ring. Honma slowed down a little bit, obviously,
yeah, sure,
in these
sure.
days. If it was prime Honma, I'd really be into this. But now here, I like that they gave Hiromu a pretty solid first round win.
But I would really go for Hiromu versus Ishii in the second round, right? Yeah, second round.
It would be a semifinal. Yeah. Or the quarterfinals, I guess, mm-hmm. technically. You know, Hiromu versus Ishii, I think it's very possible to happen, too. Like I said, I just keep an eye out on Makabe.
Yeah.
If I had to guess, though, I think it will happen. I'll go ahead and go out on a limb. I think it'll be Ishii and Hiromu in that final round of that. Kind of, they each have the four blocks, pretty much. I think that'll be the final of that one. Hiromu and Ishii.
Continuing from there, I would really love to see Okada versus Nagata once again. Nagata, once again, in a big situation, in a big match situation. I could get behind that. In the second part of that bracket, of course, Kanemaru is moving on, but Uemura moving on would be the much better choice, in my opinion, to face Taichi Ishimori then. But the idea of a Katsushika Okada versus Taichi Ishimori match in the quarterfinal, that really sounds good.
I think that's another one that has a very high possibility of happening as well, Ishimori and Okada. I would love to see that. You know, and like I said, Ishimori was one of the ones that stood out to me right away, like a longtime junior. I'd love to see what he could do against someone like Okada. Nagata and Okada, wonderful. I would love if that happened. And there's a little bit more of a possibility now since Suzuki was out of the G1 last year.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, they really push Suzuki more, even though I actually like Nagata a lot better, if it were just purely up to me. they seem to favor Minoru over him. So you could see Minoru and Okada, but we've seen that last year. We've seen that a bunch more times than Nagata and Okada. So I agree with you. I'd rather have Nagata advance than Suzuki. But I, again, much like the other one, it depends on what the plans are with Hiromu, like, really. If he were to advance again, you wouldn't run Okada versus Hiromu in this.
Yeah, that's the thing about it. I can't really see anyone beating Okada from this left part of the bracket. So that is where my idea with Hiromu Takahashi pretty much ends.
I think Suzuki could beat him, to be honest.
Yeah, they could do that.
Yeah, he's the only one. If Nagata wins, Okada's going to the finals. pretty much.
Pretty much.
You know, like I said, but I think Suzuki has a chance. I think Okada's the favorite, but I think Suzuki has a chance. And I think Ishii would probably be the one to beat Hiromu if Okada does advance.
Yeah. On the right side of the bracket, we have the chance of revisiting the G1 Climax final from 2018 with Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kota Ibushi, which was, I think, your match of the year in that year.
That was my favorite G1 of all time, even above the great Tenzan and Akiyama match. Wow. we talked about on the Patreon. That was my number one. That Tenzan was my number two, but that was my new number one, Tanahashi and Ibushi.
And that part of the bracket also gives us the chance of a match that I think has never happened, with Kota Ibushi going against Shingo Takagi.
I think that's a very interesting possibility because in my bracket, I think Tanahashi's going to take the fall against Taichi in his. And I don't like saying that. It doesn't make sense.
But you all know it's happening.
Yeah, exactly. Tanahashi, his classic first round exit. Yeah. It makes perfect sense because you don't want to have the tag partners face each other. You have Ibushi that's going to move on. Yeah, you know, so it makes perfect sense, actually, for that to happen that way. And yeah, Ibushi versus Shingo, I think that's very likely to happen. Unless they, for some reason, want to put Taichi over Ibushi as well, which hopefully does not happen.
Plus, they finally pulled the trigger on Shingo Takagi versus Sho. 1 year later.
And Sho is going to not gain very much from this either.
Yeah.
Take the fall. And I also think Sonata is going to beat Shingo, though, in my bracket. I think Sonata will emerge from this.
So the final bracket is kind of lackluster with Bushi in there, Yujiro Takahashi in there. But there is one match that stood out to me that is possible, and I would love to see it for one final time. I don't know how likely it is, but Satoshi Kojima versus Hiroyoshi Tenzan is possible.
Yeah, I think they're both going out in the first round.
Let me believe.
Well, on the other hand, I think at Tenzan, if he were to win, has a chance, like, because he's going to face probably Bushi.
Or Bushi, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so whoever wins that match is probably going to the final eight, Yoshihashi and Tenzan.
Could you imagine? Just for that sake, this match has to happen, because I can't imagine what a Tenzan versus Bushi match would look like.
Bushi
See, you can't
anyone.
Either.
Well, like I said, but Bushi against anyone, I think, is super insane. Yeah. And this is even happening in heavyweight. And so, Evil versus Kojima. Evil would have to take the fall for that to happen, and he is a key, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I revel in Evil losing, because he's such a geek, even though I like him as a wrestler, but I'm so sick of his gimmick and losing all the time. Yes. I root against him actively. Goto, also pretty much a geek, but not as much as Evil.
And not as much as Yujiro, so that works out.
Yeah, exactly. So Goto is going to beat Yujiro, and that would lead to Tenzan, Bushi, and Kojima versus Goto.
Mm-hmm.
And if Tenzan's going to win, then it would make more sense for Kojima. But to be honest with you, in my version, I think that they're going to want to have Hiromu, Sonata, and Evil all in the final eight.
Makes sense.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm going. So it'll be like Evil and Yoshihashi and Sonata and Ibushi in my bracket, and Hiromu. It would have to be Ishii.
I love how they laid out the bracket that they once again could do an Okada versus Sonata final.
I think even in March, I thought that was a possibility.
Yeah.
To have an Okada versus Sonata final. I think Sonata is the favorite of this tournament, in fact, to win. I thought it in March, and I think it now. If you remember, in February, they had the match between Sonata and Jay White.
Yeah.
And we mentioned that whoever loses would be the favorite.
Yep.
And Jay White won. that match.
Exactly.
So I was going to predict Sonata in that tournament. We never obviously got to preview it because it got canceled. But I think Sonata now with no Jay White, he's the one that makes the most sense, in my opinion.
And I mean, blowing off Tetsuya Naito versus Katsushika Okada in an arena where you can only sell every third seat doesn't make any sense at all.
No, that wouldn't make any sense. They protected that as a dome main event level match.
Hmm.
I don't think that's going to happen. So who else could it be besides Sonata?
Let's say Tanahashi does not lose to Taichi in the first round. Could he be the winner?
That would be logical because he's the perfect type of person to put in that main event. Somebody mm-hmm. who he's more in the tag team setting right now, obviously older, but credible to everyone in the fans. So it would make perfect sense for him to be in that.
Pretty much would have to be a match that is a big match, but that is not a big money match anymore. And they have done Tanahashi and Naito so many times that it is still a big match, but not as big of a money draw as Naito versus Okada or Naito versus Ibushi would be.
I think that in the right circumstance, I think Tanahashi could be a money player, but I don't think they push him that way anymore. Mm. And I think they view him more outside of that box right now. Similar to when they pushed Tanahashi and Okada in the U.S. for their G1 debut in mm. Dallas. That was a spot you don't want to give to something that would be a big draw in Japan. So that kind of showed you where they view Tanahashi.
Yeah.
Yes. But me personally, I think that could be a big money match, but that doesn't matter. In their view, I don't think they do. So I think that makes that's a very logical person to win, I would say, if it's not going to be Sonata. What about Ibushi?
Yeah. As I said, I would save a Naito versus Ibushi match for a show that you can draw a bigger audience with.
We have seen that match before, plenty of time.
We have, but I still feel like there's something left on the table with the two, and I still feel that the fans would buy it as a big match.
Oh, yeah, I feel the same, and I think he's more protected than Tanahashi. Hmm. In New Japan. Like I said, I think the fans would buy Tanahashi, I just don't think that they...
What about Shingo Takagi?
See, that would be an interesting storyline wise to do, and he makes a lot more sense to me than Sonata mm-hmm. for the LIJ guy to kind of face Naito. But again, thinking about how they have booked, if you look at how they've booked things, they always favored Sonata of the LIJ guys. But to me, Shingo is the one that I would go with. Like if I were booking the tournament, Shingo would be the one to win. So I really love that idea. And I think it's not impossible, because if you remember, he cut these great promos in February, again, before the quarantine,
yeah.
And he mentioned Naito specifically. So he did plant those seeds for that. So I really appreciated that.
Yeah, he's gotten more self-confident over the last couple of months. So that could be the next step in that development. Man, it would be a great match too.
I think that's that would probably be my number two. If it's whoever wins between Sonata and Shingo would probably be who I have winning this mm-hmm. tournament, to be honest with you, because I think that it works for both reasons. For me, I'm more of a fan of Shingo, so I would prefer that. But they have built a long-term storyline with Sonata, and especially if Okada were in the finals, I really have to look at that. Like if Suzuki and Okada face, whoever wins that, I think is going to be really telling. Because I think if Suzuki wins, it's possible Hiromu goes to the finals. Like I don't completely write it off. If they want to do an LIJ versus LIJ finals, Naito could be at ringside.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's possible. I'm not saying it's my favorite. I think Okada is more likely to do it, but I think it's a possibility. And that says something about Hiromu, because of the fact that they built up the Hiromu versus Naito match. I think that's a very big possibility that they could have. Like, could he get the match that he has been wanting all this time, and Naito has even wanted? And that could even lead to, if they wanted to do a storytelling-wise, Shingo versus Hiromu, first of all, would be an awesome match. But secondly, that could lead to, like, hey, Shingo would be like, why do you want to face him? Why don't you want to face Meek? And that could lead to more of his turn if they want to go there for it.
There's so many great possibilities, but especially the LIJ thing, it really is something that could get a lot of steam behind them once they return now. And it's, Dylan, I gotta say, it's just so great to be able to talk about these different possibilities once again with pro wrestling indeed returning. And I believe that New Japan has laid out a very responsible path of slowly getting fans into the arenas. And just on this weekend, when we're recording this show, we've seen the return of crowds to Japanese shows. Freedoms this past week, they pretty much were the first to do shows with 79 fans in attendance for their show in Shinkiba First Ring. Tokyo Yoshi Pro had 82 in attendance in Itabashi Green Hall, and Ice Ribbon had 100 fans in Yokohama Radiant Hall. So in all these cases, it's pretty much one-third of the possible drawing. And gotta say, Michinoku Pro, they've been doing shows with fans in the last couple of weeks too, but they only had 20 fans in their own dojo, so that worked out for them as well. But overall, I'm just glad that we can finally talk about wrestling being quote-unquote back.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's great for everyone's psyche. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling, and you mentioned it at the top of the show, wrestling can be an escape, you know, for a lot of people in life. So I'm really happy that it's all coming back with the fans, getting some hope now. Get to see some return to normalcy, which I think can only be good for everyone in Japan and across the world as well. And on top of that, you get this great New Japan Cup, which I'm very thankful that New Japan brought back when they came back, because that wasn't something that anybody really talked about. We didn't really know when they were coming back. But to come back with the tournament and actually have it this year, I think was a great decision for all kinds of reasons. But I will say before we get on out of here, because I just want us to put us on the record here, because the shows are about to start. By the time everybody listens to this, it'll be right around the corner for the Cup to start. Who do you think who is your official pick to win the New Japan Cup?
Now that we've talked about it, I'm picking Shingo Takagi.
I would love if that happens. I'm still going to go with Sonata, but I like your version better. I'd rather you be right,
you know,
than me.
My first idea, of course, when I read the brackets was Hiromu, but that would mean he would have to beat Okada. And the only way that I could see Hiromu Takahashi beating Okada would be in somewhat of a distraction finish, where Naito distracts Okada or something like that.
That would be cheesy. If Hiromu was going to win, it would have to be Suzuki beating Okada.
Mm-hmm.
The first round. Yeah, see, or the second round. But I like your idea of Nakata winning too. So Okada kind of throws a wrench into Hiromu for me, because it's like, how far can they go? That would be a huge departure from how they booked juniors typically. Even in the turn, like in the G1 last year, when Ospreay was still the junior champion, they didn't go with him too strong until the very end when he got the win over Tanahashi. So I think that would be interesting. That would be quite a jump. But Hiromu, he's a bigger star. He's a different level. So I don't think it's impossible that he could win if they want to put Okada out in the second round as well. Another thing worth mentioning for that, much like Tanahashi, the New Japan Cup is the land of upsets sometimes. So you could reasonably go with something Okada's not going to lose to a junior, but if loses to Suzuki and then Hiromu beats Suzuki, that makes a lot more sense, because Ishii, Suzuki, or Nagata are all people that Hiromu can reasonably beat.
Yeah, you know what the best part of this is? That neither Okada nor Tanahashi can lose to Bad Luck Fale in the first round of the tournament.
that's always a blessing. Like I said, a lot of the guys that they left, I'm not really like that. Guys that they took out are people that I didn't need to see anyway, and he was definitely... So again, I think that this new version is a lot better. I'm changing my pick. Forget Sonata. I'm going with Hiromu. I talked myself into it. Suzuki over Okada and Hiromu over everybody.
I want to believe too, Dylan, so I'm just going to be saying that Hiromu wins too.
Yeah, I've convinced you. Like I said, hopefully I haven't
Fuck
lived.
It. He beats Okada decisively. Yeah. Time bumps Okada. Come on.
Yeah, go one step further. He beats Okada. It's like, sure. why not? Like, he beats everybody. go for it. Hiromu, I'm all for it.
But I mean, think what a great final would that be? Hiromu Takahashi versus Shingo Takagi. That would be amazing.
I would love that if that happens. I hope that happens. I want him to beat Sonata so much in that match. Yeah. But they had the story with Sonata that I don't know if they're ready to go away with. But the Hiromu one's a lot better, so hopefully they go with that instead. I would love that. Let's put Shingo into the finals, have a classic match, And maybe that could set up something too. I also think this tournament is going to be used well to set up things for the G1 as well in October. So keep that in mind when you watch someone like Hiromu. If somebody does go on a bit of a run, maybe they could do something there. My last question about this is it possible Bushi advances into the semifinals, into the final? Could he beat Yoshihashi or Tenzan in the second round?
I don't think so.
Can you imagine if Evil loses and then Bushi moves forward? That would be the ultimate geek move for Evil. So although I'm a fan of Yoshihashi, I would love to see Goto and Tacos have a match.
Yeah.
That would be But the thought of Evil looking like such a loser and Bushi moving forward over him amuses me. So I wouldn't completely discount that. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, they've gone to the fluke win thing with Bushi before when he beat Zack Sabre in that singles match, which was baffling to begin with. He had this thing with Bad Luck Fale too, where he beat him last year. So, as you said, it's the realm of upsets.
That's right. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be an interesting tournament.
Absolutely. So I really enjoyed talking about the New Japan Cup and everything else with you. If you, the listeners, want to get into interaction with us, you can, of course, do that through our Twitter. We are at Eastern Lariat on Twitter, where you can also find the links to our Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. As Dylan said, we are right on the tail end of a week of Lariat we did on Hiroyoshi Tenzan's career, and there is much more stuff up there with Dylan reviewing the King of Gate and much more older stuff like the 90s project. So please check out our Patreon as well. And for me, that is it. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.